This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3342 for Tuesday, the 25th of May 2021. Today's show is entitled HPR 2020, 2021 New Year's Eve Show Episode 2. It is hosted by Hunky Magoo and is about 61 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, the HPR community stops by for a chat.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Now, I can remember being more at ease on IC services when I was younger, because maybe because your balance goes off as you get older or something. Maybe it doesn't start. It depends on all sorts of factors, I'm sure. But I make sure my driveway is well cleared or salted come this sort of weather, and so I don't fall over going up and down it.
There's a fella down the road. He put in a couple of years ago in-ground heating for his driveway and ties in hot water heating from his hot water heater.
That is very clever. The Edinburgh installed such a thing in, because Edinburgh's a quite a hilly city, and there's one particular slope that they installed that in. So, you know, just the largest bit of snow, and they will switch that on and it all vanishes. So yeah, it's a great idea. I'm sure it's not good economics for a house, but still, good idea.
I believe, I think it's Iceland, they have hot water pipes that they use for that kind of thing, because they have like natural hot water springs or whatever they call them.
Yep. Being such a volcanic area, it's plenty of that, I would imagine. Do they not run a lot of their energy supply from the hot water coming up from the volcanic areas, something like that? Do they? I'm not sure what they do exactly, but they do use it.
Yeah, I think they use the geothermal energy.
That's the one. Yep.
I had a friend who went to Reykjavik and said Iceland is just beautiful. It's somewhere I want to go because I've seen the pictures.
Yeah, it's somewhere I'd like to go to. It looks amazing. All the hot springs and the volcanoes and that, whatever it is, rift that goes through part of the island where the two tectonic plates are butting up against one another. Is that what's happening there? Or, yeah, I think it is, isn't it? You can actually see that as a sort of cliff through the island at some point.
Yeah, I saw a video. I think it was like Tom Scott or something about that. I don't remember what he said.
No, I've only got a vague recollection of how that all works. But I think there are undersea continuations of this thing. It's two tectonic plates colliding, I think. That's why the volcanoes. So, yeah, it's a pretty spectacular place. And the Iceland, you go on.
Oh, I think it's splitting for volcanoes and colliding for earthquakes, but I'm not into plate tectonics, so I wouldn't know.
Is it not the case that all along the Pacific coast of the USA, it's all collision, isn't it? Rather than and that as the plates collide, one goes under the other, and then you get it sort of gets absorbed into the mantle, and that causes volcanoes. Is that not the way it works?
I'm going to consult Google for this one.
Subduction.
I think there is one way, yes.
There's also separations where you get hot spots coming up, don't you? But there, and they can form volcanic islands and that type of stuff. Isn't that what the Galapagos islands are? Not sure.
Sounds right.
I've always just tinkered around with the idea of geology, never really got into it. My daughter did a course on geology at the university she was at a few years ago. The freshers, as they call them, the first year students got to choose various modules from a whole set of courses throughout the whole university, and she chose a geology one. So they didn't go much into that sort of stuff, but they were out hunting for fossils along the Scottish coast, I think. Sounded pretty cool. I wouldn't mind doing that.
Yeah, fossils are interesting.
You being in Florida, all you got to do is run down to the coast and look for some shark teeth. Just find the black ones in the water.
That's true. I have seen, I believe, something like that, but I don't recall. I'm not a big fan of the beach.
I'm a huge fan of the beach. It's the people I have the problem with.
It's not having clothes on, but I'm not a big fan of that. Prefer to stay, like, away from the whole thing. Just stay inside.
I think I can sympathize with that to some degree. I've certainly not been overly bothered by this lockdown business. I mean, I'm retired, so it's not affected me work-wise, but I've actually quite enjoyed having an excuse not to go out very much. It's getting, I could do with a bit more getting out and about soon, but the year's not been too bad.
I actually switched jobs just around the start of the pandemic, so now this is my perception of how my job actually is.
Do you think it's going to be continuing the way it is now? I'm asking that because it looks like some businesses are actually going to accept the fact that people can work from home and carry on with that. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's going to keep this way. I think, well, my company in particular, they were already pretty, they allowed people to work from home. I just think that people are now going to take that more liberally than before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I was allowed to work from home from time to time. I was in IT working for a local university, and I did do a few projects myself. We didn't have many in my team. We didn't have many programmers, and I ended up writing some stuff. Just nothing exciting, but I did ask if I could do that from home because it just kept the interruptions down, and they were fairly easygoing about that actually. So which was a bit of a surprise because there was an attitude that if you weren't at your desk, you weren't working. But that seemed to have relaxed even then. That's about 10, 15 years ago. So I'm sure that now that whole message has got through the management hierarchy.
Was that Edinburgh University?
No, there's about five universities in Edinburgh. I worked for Heriot Watt University, which is an engineering university quite close to where I live.
Nice.
Yeah, it's got mechanical engineering, chemical engineering, petroleum engineering, and all those sorts of things. It's quite an interesting place.
Yeah, in my old university, we used to have also petroleum engineering. They were in the mines department.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts are you?
Right now I'm in Stockholm. I come from Portugal.
Okay. Oh, right. Oh, yes, I remember. I remember remarking on the fact that Portuguese guy in Scandinavia. I do remember commenting on your shows at some point on the community news. But we used to get a lot of Norwegian students at one time at Heriot Watt. I think because a lot of them were coming over for the engineering possibilities, and also Chinese and Singaporean who were overdoing building engineering, that type of stuff.
Yeah, there's also a lot of Chinese here, but I mostly see them in the computer science department.
Yeah, I think the mix has changed at Heriot Watt. My son's doing an MSc there just now in computer science, and there's a lot of international students there in general. Well, I'm going to have to go and do some domestic stuff, so I'm going to leave you guys for the moment. It's been good to speak to you all. Catch you later.
Catch you later.
Talk to you later.
Talk to you. Good luck.
Thank you.
I'm doing domestic stuff as well. I'm just, you know, not paying complete focus.
I'm just doing general things.
Does anyone use Termux on their Android device?
Termux?
Termux is an advanced terminal emulator, basically a Linux environment as an app on Android.
I just didn't catch it phonetically. Yeah, I tried it a few times. It's cool, but the Android keyboards.
No, the functionality is not really with the command line itself, but being able to run scripts whenever needed.
Yeah, that I never really got into running many scripts on my phone. I still kind of see it as a phone somehow.
I don't even have an Android phone. I need one because I don't really like the iPhone anymore, but money.
The wife ends up taking a lot of pictures, and it's easy to have her be able to push a button and upload on the servers.
That sounds like a show.
It does.
It's a very short show. Probably happened here.
I think there's more details you can include. Come on.
I can't hear that guy who said that, by the way, just very quietly.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Thanks. It's Tony from Mintcast.
Hey.
Hi, guys. Happy New Year. Well, I don't know whether it's New Year where you are. I don't think it is yet.
No, not yet.
No, not for a while.
So what's happening with
everyone there, Tony, or are you just, your mic's queuing up on block?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Hi.
Yeah. I was just going to say, what's happening your ways? We've just gone down into another lockdown here in the UK.
And the Canada, some of the provinces are doing good. Some of them are not doing so hot. I'm in one of the ones that's doing fairly well.
Take it you're in Canada if you're talking about the provinces.
I am in Canada. My folks are back down south, though. They're all right, but they're just north of Florida there.
Here in Florida, we're doing well. Yeah. Not very well. We don't really know what we're doing.
I'm over on the west coast of the UK.
Is that bad?
We've half the country's now in the highest lockdown tier, and over 80% of the country's in tier 3, which is just one down from that.
Well, that's not so good.
So you're tier 3 over there. Is it like our red zone where you're only allowed to like a single family bubble type deal? Can't have like extended family come in?
Yeah, tier 4 is even more strict than that. You can't have anyone come around your house at all unless you're bubbled with someone who's vulnerable and lives on their own.
Yeah, I don't think we have anything like that in America.
America loves its freedom.
Nothing like that in Sweden.
Is it echoing for everyone else?
That might be my fault. I'll put my headphones on.
Yeah, I think that'll help.
It's all right. My children are screaming. I think I can deal with an echo.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me so much. It's just, I don't know. I don't want the recording or anyone listening to bother.
That's better.
It makes it sound a bit more experimental, you know, some nice distortion effects.
Lo-fi.
I couldn't get push to talk to set up, so I've got it on so that it cuts out when I don't speak.
Yeah, I think mine, it's weird. I think I said this earlier. I have my push to talk set to middle mouse button, so I just paste stuff constantly, but it's so convenient.
I have it on print screen. No, actually, it's scroll lock.
I couldn't find anywhere in Mumble that tells you how to set up the key.
Oh, you just press the thing that says push to talk, and it immediately asks, and it doesn't let you continue before you select the key.
No, it wouldn't do that when I tried to set it up.
Oh, that is weird.
Huh. Yeah, that's strange.
I'm on Mumble 132.
If that helps you.
I'm on 1.2.19.
Well, maybe that's it.
Yeah. I know if you're on Linux, there's like issues. You have to use the Flatpak or whatever.
I'm on OpenBSD.
I'm on Mint. Mint Mate.
I use Pop OS myself.
Ah, Pop OS fan.
System 76?
Yeah, it is.
Nice. Do you have one?
Yeah, actually I do. It's their laptop.
Yeah, that sounds awfully convenient.
That's a podcast. It's an episode. Show. That's what I'm looking for. Show. Which I'll probably never do because I'm too scared.
Yeah, I have a couple of shows in that I haven't been able to record yet. I started and halfway through I'm like, okay, I'm trailing off too much. I'm quitting.
I don't know. I like shows where people just kind of let it progress and they ramble on. Like, that's how I talk, and I appreciate it.
Same here.
Yeah, same here, but I still don't like to put out those shows.
Understandable.
Me neither. That's why I have such a long show history.
Yeah, I have the longest year of my resounding zero.
I haven't done any shows downloads, for
I'm sure you're not the only one.
I always notice it seems so common that two people have the same idea, like not the same idea, the same idea to talk at the same time. I don't know why it happens so often.
Yeah. So did anyone listen to my series on the model cars?
Yeah, I listened to the first couple of episodes. That was really nice.
Good.
Not the whole thing, because eventually I stopped listening to podcasts for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only caught... however many, it's been like a month, and I've only caught some of them. I've been thinking about doing an episode or a show, but I'm a bit nervous about it, and I don't really know where I would start.
Have you not recorded anything yet?
No.
Why don't you just start off with your tech journey? Just talk about how you got into technology, if you use Linux, whatever. Just talk about that.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, actually.
It's usually a good start-off one. That's what I did.
I think I'll work on that.
And Ken would be very happy to have a new host.
And I think my audio might be sorted.
Ah, yes. Curiosity, we could hear you.
It was just a bit of a mission to get the VM that I'm running this on to see all the hardware properly.
Mm. With audio, every time I restart my computer, and I haven't found a fix to this, it automatically defaults to trying to output into my microphone.
That sounds like a very curious problem, isn't it?
It is.
It wants to default to output to your microphone?
Yeah.
Are you running ALSA?
Yes.
You should be able to...
Maybe try switching to Pulse Audio.
Oh, yeah, sorry. No, I am using Pulse Audio.
Hi, it's just my sec here. Do you have one of these PCs that have auto-assigning sockets on them? You know, they've got like the actual motherboard itself auto-assigns the actual socket, because I've had that issue where it'll think it's a different device. It thinks it's a microphone, but it's actually a speaker or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know specifically enough, but I know it is a USB microphone, so it's not like it's anything special. So it makes sense that it would have errors like that. It's just a cheapo thing off Amazon.
Sometimes the USB microphones also have a output for headphones as well, so that could be what it's picking up.
Mine does. Oh, I'm holding my microphone while talking. Hold on. That's probably not the best idea. Mine doesn't have one of those.
No, mine sometimes defaults to my webcam. I have to change it.
That's quite interesting.
Yeah, mine sometimes defaults my webcam for input, not for output though.
So yeah. are you all using Pulse Audio?
Yes. Does anyone use just ALSA?
I think I'm just using ALSA.
I think ALSA is basically from the late 90s. Not sure if a lot of people would still use it.
Well, it's whatever's the default on Mint anyway.
I remember in 99, when I just started working on Linux, you still had to recompile the kernel if you install your Sound Blaster. Was it Sound Blaster 1.1 or something? Then you had to get that ALSA working.
Yeah, that was a bit sooner than I got into Linux. I didn't get into Linux until 2006, 2007.
Yeah, same time for me.
Yeah. Ubuntu's got a lot to answer for.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely a late start, like 2016 here.
Ah, right.
I think I started in like 98, 99, somewhere right there around with Curiosity.
Yeah, I worked for a ISP, and all our web servers were obviously Red Hat, what was it that time, 4.7, I think. GNOME and KDE and those things didn't exist. So yeah, just had that raw X background. Interesting times.
TWM?
Sorry, I missed that.
Was it TWM?
I can't remember what it was called. It's just, I think it's just called like Capital X. It had like a dot, white dots and black dots background, and your cursor was a big X, and then you had to right click command and then do things like that. There was no actual interface. It was just sort of a layer for graphics or utilities built on graphics.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts are you, Curiosity?
I'm in South Africa. I was just about to say, it was also that sort of 99-ish era when I first got involved in the security bits of computers. You know, working with an ISP, you tend to get curious about these things automatically. So me and one of the other call center guys, you know, we just started messing around. PHP was still fairly new. And then I found that, oh, you can actually run system commands using PHP. And back in the day, I mean, everybody was so lazy. So you literally just, everybody logged in as root, and then you configure your web server, and Bob's your uncle. So I found that you can cat the password file using PHP on a web browser. And yeah, we did that to the Oxford University Language Division something, and next morning I was called into the office. yeah, it was a bit of an interesting one.
Are you on the coast or are you inland?
Inland.
I visited a few of the coastal cities. Been to Cape Town and Durban and Joburg.
Yeah, Cape Town is best. I am just a little bit north of Joburg in Pretoria, our capital. And, I would not mind living in Cape Town there. Oh, that is awesome. Although not at the moment. It seems like it's one of the COVID hotspots at the moment.
Oh, is it?
Although basically all of South Africa, we're back to level 3 lockdown. So no booze. And I wish they gave us a heads up on that, because now everybody's going to be dry on New Year's Eve.
Shame.
Yeah, they've locked down all the pubs here as well. Although you can still go and buy it from the off licenses and the supermarkets.
Yeah, on this side we're a bit of a rebel community. So when we first hit the high-level lockdown, and they took away booze and cigarettes and all of those things. We started distilling and made a bit of bucks. I mean, I'm a bit of a rebel that way. But people paid ridiculous amounts of money for just, you know, a little bit of rum, which basically is just fermented molasses that you distill. So yeah.
So you're a bit of a moonshiner.
Yeah, in South Africa, it's fairly legal as long as you've got your permit, and you cannot have bigger than 100 liter kettle. It's legal, but it's illegal to sell.
Yeah.
But if you're going to take away everybody's booze, you know, for responsible people, I'm not talking about alcoholics and party animals, whatever. You know, at night, I'd like to have a drink or two just before I go to bed. And for that sort of community, I've got no problem supplying them.
Mm. Yeah, in this country, you can make wine and beer, but you can't make spirits. You can't have a still.
Is that the UK?
Yeah, here in the UK, and I believe it's the same in the North America. You can't have stills.
Yeah,
no, you can have stills in the US.
Oh.
Well, a private one for personal use.
Yes, private for personal use, and your output has less than 3 gallons per year.
Oh, right. Okay.
3 gallons per year. That sounds like a whole lot there.
That's a lot of booze.
Per year? That,
per year.
I don't know.
Well, that's 24 pints. That's a lot of booze.
I think I'd do a little bit more than that a year.
I don't know anybody who does less than
If you think about the average bottle of spirit, it's a 750 milliliters. I don't know how much that is an ounce or whatever you use in the States to measure. But yeah, 750 mils, and you could probably do two of those a month. That's 1.5 liters a month times 12, roughly 12 liters.
Yeah, 750 mils, is that 26 ounces?
750 is 1.1 quarts.
Yeah, when you put it like that, I don't know, 3 gallons just seems like such a small number in general, but yeah.
3 gallons definitely is a small number. Usually when you're running a batch, you want a higher number than 3 gallons because you have to chop off 10% on the head and 10% on the tail at a minimum to save quality and keep it from being toxic.
Yeah, we tend to do a little bit more aggressive than that because the good stuff is anyway sitting in the middle. So I normally would strip from my 100 liter boiler, I would probably get about 12 odd liters of distillate and from the stripping run, and then I will start do a very slow run in 300 ml increments and label them bottle 1, 2, 3, 4 until whenever. And then when I start mixing, I would start from the center and then I'll move outwards. So let's say I've got 30 bottles, start at 15, then taste 14 and 16 and 13 and 17 and so forth until you start to get some off flavors, and the rest you just chuck.
Yeah.
So you don't pour them all together and proof them all so they're all the same?
Once I've mixed it, so I would do tastings from the center, and the ones that I like go into a single container, and then I will add some American white oak for rum, or if I do a brandy, then I'll use French oak for that.
Gotcha. So you do your proofing after your tasting. Usually for us, it's the other way around. We proof, then we taste, or we test, proof, and then drink.
This sounds like a great show. Talking about this,
go back to the 400s. I think there's already one there.
Is there? Wow.
I think the first one was talking.
When I do the proofing, basically I would keep it as raw as possible, and then oak with as high as possible percentage of ABV, and then I would leave it on oak for 3 months, 6 months, whatever, and then I will dilute it down with distilled water until I get to the, like, something that you're going to drink neat, it's about 38%, and for something that you're going to use as a mix, I'll put it to, like, 42%.
So do you burn your barrels, char the inside of your barrel where you're doing your proofing, or do you just let it?
I buy little cubes of previously used burnt barrels, but it's got a second scorching applied to them. It's sort of 1-inch cubes. I think the most famous one that we get here is from Jack Daniels. So they buy barrels from Jack Daniels, cut it up into 1-inch cubes, and then just burn one side, and then we use it like that.
Up in Newfoundland, they have a spirit that they call it Screech, and the rum bottles from, or the rum barrels from Jamaica, and they will fill the rum barrels up with water and let them sit for a while, distill that water.
Oh, that sounds pretty awesome.
So has Ken been around today?
He was in earlier.
Yeah, he usually comes on first thing.
He had to go take some care of some domestic stuff.
Yeah, yeah, he usually has stuff today.
Dave had stuff. Ken went to go take care of some work. Actually had to work today.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a bank holiday until tomorrow.
We've got to run. My Uber Eats is here. I'll chat now.
Has anyone had their first call?
Their first what? Hi, Ken.
Hi, Tony. Hi,
how are you doing?
Not too bad, not too bad.
Yeah.
Waiting for this year to be over. Like many.
Aren't we all?
How are you faring? Good health? I hope.
A lot better than I have been. I've had some physical stuff going on the last couple of months.
That's good. That's good. Well, not good, but it's good to hear it's cleared up.
Starting to, yeah.
Good, 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 good.
We're coming up to New Year in Australia, I see.
Yeah, that's the big one. That's
a real place.
See if...
Wait, so Klaatu's already in the New Year?
It's in 4 minutes, according to my clock.
Adelaide. And then Brisbane an hour later. And then Darwin an hour later.
Yeah.
I think Latu's on New Zealand. I thought New Zealand.
Yeah, it could be actually. Yeah, New Zealand celebrated an hour ago, 2 hours ago.
Someone needs to make a website that just lets you know when New Year's is happening.
I'll put a link in the show notes to that very thing.
Ah, lovely.
What about is there a link to the show notes?
Yes, on the Hacker Public Radio page.
Oh, I must have missed it.
It says something weird. I think it's like, let me look.
No, it's on the home page. I wrote it myself.
Yeah, it's on the home page. I've just put something in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, no, that's there.
Let me put the link in there as well. Hold on 1 second.
That's a nice clock and different places.
Yeah, timeanddate.com is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's handy that you can just click next and previous time zone. Melbourne are 52 seconds into the new year.
Yeah.
Next one is Adelaide in 30 minutes.
Still at 16 hours in my time zone. Not quite there yet.
I'll pin that tab so it doesn't go away.
10 seconds.
Yay! Happy New Year to Melbourne and Victoria!
Yeah.
Is my clock off? Because it's happened 10 seconds.
I don't 14 know. Seconds mine says it's been 15 seconds since it happened.
Okay. Time lag must be brutal. I'll drop off again because I have a few tickets to fill up. Tony, right. I'll talk to you later on this evening. I'm still
I'm not going to be around much this afternoon. I just thought I'd pop in and say hi, but I'll probably be around more this evening.
Tomorrow's another day. We'll keep it going. Try and do it all over the whole weekend.
Yeah. I'll try and
talk to you later.
All right. Okay. Cheers, Ken.
I'll try and last as long as I can here. Definitely won't be making it 10 years. I'll have to go to bed before then. But I'll be here for New Year's.
So what's the name behind the 09L or 1 or whatever it is?
It's an L. Geez, what did you call me? I don't know. I don't know what I'd rather be called here.
O'Neill?
O'Neill. That's like a
person of interest.
Dear. I don't know if I'd rather go with a real name, but I don't have anything else to be called.
O'Neill.
O'Neill. I mean, most people, most people just go with 09, but I don't know. That sounds dumb.
I know. I've got
a friend who's called Six. That's his surname. Perry Six.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. He changed it by depot.
Jeez.
Changed it to Seven.
His mum wasn't too happy.
Yeah, I don't think I would be if my child changed their name to Six. I'd be a bit disappointed in him.
Six sounds more like the first name for, the sixth child.
Oh, he was an only child, so that didn't come into it.
After two, they all get referred to as numbers anyways.
Speaking of someone who has that situation, usually you just get every name, like all of them, until you get the right one.
It's like playing whack-a-mole. U4.
It's an NP naming scheme.
I'm going to name all my children in camel case. Just so everyone thinks I'm lying. Their name will be all one word. God, that's a joke, right? Nope.
It's an effective way to get them a nickname.
They'll be named after, I don't know, something that's just going to confuse everyone. Call back to that XKCD comic.
Johnny Drop Tables is amazing. I mean, you can always give them names with no vowels so that they're not actually readable.
Isn't that just Polish?
Good point.
I think all Poles are actually lying. None of them are real.
I met one.
No, you didn't. It's an illusion.
He was half Italian, so he was only half an illusion.
Like a hologram.
Exactly.
I get a fancy toy for Christmas that I need to talk about.
I'm intrigued.
I get a old Dell R710 with 192 gigs of RAM.
Wow. That's very interesting.
I picked it up off of eBay. No, $30, $200 with shipping. 200 Canadian, but really cheap.
Oh, geez. Let me convert that to numbers for everyone else.
Just multiply it by 0.7.
I'm not that good at math, honestly.
Roughly 160.
160, okay. I think we have some prints.
It's shipped from London, so that was pretty cool. I think I'm going to put Proxmox on it and have a couple nice big ZFS, do some fun things. Already got about 48 terabytes, so I'll just be moving things from low-powered devices to that.
Yeah. For storage space, I try and keep all my media, you know, mine. Like, I download piracy, you know. But I don't have enough storage space. I only have, like, 10 terabytes. Which I thought would be enough forever.
Do you delete, or do you just keep forever?
No, I'm a hoarder. I can't delete things.
So you should look into multiple drive enclosures for hoarding nice ZFS to keep enlarge the amount of data that you have. And it's just going to cost you power for powering all the drives.
Yeah, I don't think power will be too bad. I don't know. I say that now. Watch in 10 years.
And to control heat, you should try and stick to 5400 RPM drives and try and avoid the 7200. Use more power and they create more heat. They're faster though, so speed is a thing. But if you're everything in the ZFS pool, speed's not going to be a problem. And I mirror everything. So I got 48 terabytes of raw storage, but I only have 24 terabytes of actual.
Yeah.
That's a nice setup.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not all on one box. It's spread in between three different, and they're split in between Arch Linux, which was dumb, and FreeBSD. So the Z-pools themselves are incompatible between the systems.
And all of a sudden, sounds like we're in a sort of BSD now.
I keep all my sensitive documents in three different locations, physically.
RAID does not count as a backup.
Yes, I know.
I've been trying to set up some sort of a network storage array.
Go on, curiosity. You have my interest.
The thing is, it's probably about a year now that I've gone back into security research and things like that. So I wanted to set up something similar to Troy Hunt's database, but something that I control myself so that I can run my own statistics and things like that. So start with getting things like that collection 125 and what's it, exploit _in and, you know, all those things. Get everything into a single Mongo database and then split the usernames and passwords where you sort them alphabetically to basically break that link between the login and the password. And at that point, I believe it should be legal to keep that data, and then you can start to run your own statistics on that. But holy crap, that takes a lot of space.
How much space are you talking about it needing?
I think just to import all the data that I've got access to, I need probably about 15 terabytes. Then I probably need double that in order to export the data where I break the link between the usernames and passwords. So it needs basically go double, and then I can wipe the original source data where the login credentials are still linked. So yeah, I'll probably need close to 25-30 terabytes.
Are you able to store the data in plain text?
Yes, I can, but that makes the whole anonymizing of the data quite a bit trickier, I think.
Well, after you split the data from where it's linked to unlinked, can you go from it being linked in whatever format it's in now to plain text after you unlink it?
That can work, but I want to set up like a Spark type setup to run analytical queries. So I think probably Mongo or some sort would probably make more sense if I want to start build statistics of things like how long do people typically use a single password for, or across how many different services do you use the same password, things like that is what I want to calculate and write a report on.
Gotcha. So plain text is probably not your best bet. The only reason I was asking for plain text was with CFS pools and Z pool compress everything, and plain text compresses 40% to 60%.
Yeah, for compression, I think that'll be absolutely the best way to go. I think storing the data like that makes sense. And then if I have specific analytics that I want to run, then you can just spike some data usage for a little bit and then drop it again afterwards.
You could, if you have access to segments of the data, you could test if storing in plain text is going to actually save you that much space by getting a subset of your data out and dropping it on a, not on a setup, but just on like a Z volume, ZVOL, just create a ZFS volume in a file and enable compression on it and test your storing there to see how much you're going to gain or lose. But in my opinion, that would take a lot of time, and I would just go straight to storing whatever format you're going to store it in.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I remember when before I started importing everything into Mongo, because I've got a subset of the data that I'm working with now, which is about 300 gigs, and the original source text files were just over 170 gigs. So yeah, having it in Mongo makes it substantially bigger. And I didn't even create indexes yet, so it's just got the default ID or underscore ID index.
Sorry, I had text-to-speech enabled. I was just trying to disable that real quick. So when you have everything in Mongo, it increases the size and you haven't even put indexes in. Am I following you so far?
Yeah, that is correct. So I would say just storing the data in Mongo probably increases the space by 20%. I know that Troy Hunt uses a different technology, but it's something that I'm not familiar with. So maybe it's time to, trade into new territories.
What about using something like Postgres instead of Mongo?
I tried that. Holy crap, the queries are so slow. So just querying count of a specific email address in a couple of 100 million records takes literally 10 minutes for that query to run. And I don't have the space to create the index on email, so yeah.
So acquiring space, what are you planning on for as far as you putting drives together to make space for this? Like, what size are you targeting?
I like the 2 terabyte drives because they're fairly secure. I don't need redundancy because this is, for research purpose. It's not really important data. So I'm thinking just like every month buy 2 or 3 2 terabyte drives and then just start building an array of them. I first thought about create like a NAS using Raspberry Pis, but they're a bit slow still, so I want to have a look at Raspberry Pi 4. Maybe that starts to get better, because I know that there's an interface that you can buy that connects to USB 3 that converts it into SATA. Isn't Raspberry Pi 4, don't they use USB-C? That would even be better. Or there's even something that plugs into the GPIO. I'm not sure. I need to look at the new Raspberry Pis, but that might be a viable option. So just create an array of these things and just hook them in parallel.
Yeah, the Raspberry Pi 4 does have USB 3 on it.
But is it 3.0 or is it 3.1?
I'd have to go and take a look for that.
Because that's almost full speed difference right there.
I have for research purpose.
On my machine downstairs, and I have a 5-bay external enclosure, and I've got a Z pool in that. But if I had the enclosure is rated for 3.1, and I've had it plugged into a machine with 3.1 before, and the speed difference for the same pool is insane.
No, it's 2 USB 3.0 ports.
Yeah, I think even 3.0 might still work fine, because seeing as it's research only, I can run my analysis through the night and then just on the next day get the results, save that into a text file and use that in my reports.
If you're looking at external drives, you should try and focus on getting eSATA
rather than anything USB, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's kind of still going to be a while before Raspberry takes that up, but maybe I can build some small nano ITX platform.
You could buy a compute module, and one of the boards for that does have a PCI Express slot.
Don't some of the Odroids have a PCI?
Possibly, yeah. I've not done much single board computing apart from with the Pi.
Pi was just a thought to try and keep costs down.
If you're going to use something like the Pi, maybe you might want to look at some of the old Intel Atom boards, and then you don't have to screw with the ARM architecture, because the ARM's going to screw you over if you're trying to build RAIDs and whatnot.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah.
There must be drivers and things out there, though, because servers are moving over to ARM, and obviously they're going to have RAID capability, aren't they?
Some servers are moving over to ARM, and some servers have RAID capability. But for things like CFS, you still have to use the DKMS every time you go and do any kernel upgrade, and I do not trust that. It's a pain.
Yeah, I'm not big into server technology, so you probably know a lot more than I do.
Oh no, I'm just some good electric.
What does everyone think of the Raspberry Pi 400, by the way?
Looks cool. Looks like something I'd probably just get it for like my kids.
Yeah, I was just a bit disappointed that they didn't go for 8 gig with the first release. I think they probably will eventually, but I just thought it was a missed opportunity. I know it would have cost a little bit more, but...
Is it 4 byte? What is it, 4 byte?
But I've also noticed that the Raspberry Pis are slowly getting more expensive, which kind of defeats the original selling point of super cheap computing.
Yeah, you've still got the $35 base model with the 2 gig, and gradually that'll increase, you know, as technology prices reduce, as they always do, or always seem to. You know, you'll probably end up with a 4 gig model at some stage for $35.
I had 16 of the original Raspberry Pi B pluses, and I daisy chained them all together in a Beowulf cluster. And the switch was about the same price as the Raspberry Pis were.
Mm. I've got an original 256B from the second batch of 10,000 that came out.
You can sell that one to a museum.
My mate's got one of the original 10,000.
I'm still using two of my Raspberry Pis.
What, the initial, the B plus?
Yeah, I had 16 of them. I have two left, and I'm still using both of them.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of them out there. And they're still in projects that you built them for, and they still work. There's no need to change them.
Exactly. Single-purpose servers. Sorry.
That's exactly what I use them for. One of them is just an R clone server to keep all my org files on locally, and that's all it does, manage my org files, because I use org extensively. And then the other one is my IRC bouncer. It runs ZNC, and that's all it does, and I want it always there.
Brilliant.
The Etherpad that we are doing the show notes on is running off of the Banana Pi, which right around, probably about as powerful as the Model B plus of the Raspberry Pi.
So now, take into the account the cost of the Pi, and then take into account the cost per terabyte of an enterprise SSD, which is between $120 and $140 US. So you probably get the 6 terabyte enterprise SSD for, we'll say, $800, and then link that. How many Pis does that pay for when you're getting the higher end model of the Raspberry Pi 4? I find that the bang for the buck is just not there anymore.
The Raspberry Pi 4 for the 8 gig models, 8 gig of RAM model is £73 here in the UK.
That's bouncing right around the $100 USD mark, right?
Yeah, probably a little bit less with the current. I don't know what the current exchange rate is. I'll go and check.
The server I just got off of eBay was 105 quid. I know whatever the exchange was about to go down.
Yeah, a pound is 136 in dollar terms.
Okay, ladies and gents, I need to step up. I need to go on a shopping run, get some cold meats and crackers and cheese and things for tonight. So I'll probably be away for an hour or two, and yeah, maybe I'll see you guys later.
Okay, I'll probably
yourself. Stay safe, bud.
Yeah, have fun. Yeah, have
same
fun.
Day.
Yeah. I've just done the calculations, and that exchange rate, it's pretty well exactly $100, 99.96.
Yeah, so if you're getting the best Raspberry Pis you can get right now, Enterprise SSD, a 6 terabyte Enterprise SSD, or get 7 Raspberry Pis.
Yeah, but it's chalk and cheese, really, isn't it? Totally different use case scenario.
Mr. Curiosity there was wanting to build a NAS.
Yeah.
I price everything storage in terms of storage, because storage is the most important thing for what I and my family are local media for. We use storage for ripping the Blu-rays and keeping the 4K home videos and all the pictures and all that stuff. And you want to keep all that stuff safe.
I know. It soon builds up as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've got probably 8 terabytes of pictures and videos.
Ooh.
From the past 10 years that the wife and I have been married, plus a couple hundred gigs from before.
Well, I've got 2 4-terabyte external drives that I store all my video and graphics on, and they're just over half full each, you know, because one's a mirror of the other, and they're just over 2 terabytes full. But I don't rip Blu-ray, I only rip DVD.
We're coming up on New Year's in Adelaide, by the way.
We are, yes. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Happy New Year, Adelaide.
It's the next one. 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Yeah. And then it'll be Brisbane.
I don't know. I just find it harder to keep data these days. My in-laws had a 7-year-old camera. We got them a new camera for Christmas this year. And one of the first things they noticed when they took the camera home after Christmas was that the file sizes for the pictures were about 3 times the size of the file sizes of the pictures of their old camera. So the first thing that my father-in-law did was he went into the settings of the camera and he picked the smallest file size possible for the camera.
What? I always do the opposite.
Why would you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want the best quality, not the worst.
His logic is he doesn't want to pay for the space to store things, so I'm going to let him figure it out.
Yeah, but given that in the old days you used to have to pay for printing and processing and all that, you still, with modern camera technology, you're still saving bags of money.
My father-in-law is a penny pincher, so it doesn't matter where you're saving money. I want to save more money.
I thought I was the tight wood.
I'm pretty tight. I like quality.
Yeah. I think I said it on Mintcast a few weeks ago, that sometimes buying the best quality pays off in the long term anyway, because you just end
up discovering that painfully with hard drives and SSDs.
Yeah,
I don't look at the cheap hard drives anymore because it's been too painful. Unless you're willing to buy 5 of them at a time.
Yeah, there's certain times that you buy the best, and certain times you go to eBay and buy cheapo cheap.
Well, if you're gonna buy eBay cheapo cheap, put it in a RAID 0 and expect to.
Oh no, I'm not thinking of technology. I'm thinking of other things. Necessarily, I wasn't thinking of good quality stuff. But if you want to tinker with electronics and stuff, sometimes going to eBay and buying cheap stuff is it's a way, because then you're not worried if you blow it up if it's only cost you 50 cents.
Go to AliExpress and buy it in bulk from the source.
Yeah,
you know, penny pincher.
You know how sometimes you just lose the ability to type? That's happening to me right now.
So I'm just reading our new COVID regulations for where I live and what I can and can't do.
Is there anything interesting in there?
Yeah, well, we're under a stay-at-home order. Went into it at midnight. So unless you work and you have to leave the house to do your work. If you can work from home, you're supposed to. If you can't, you can go. You can leave the house for that. You can go and buy food or send, you know, medicines and things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm just having a look at. You can leave home to visit people in your support bubble or to provide informal childcare.
That's nice. We can't even have that here. We go back a phase. So when we can go back not? A phase from where we are now, my in-laws are not allowed to come over and watch my kids when I do things like go to work, which I have to do. And my wife has to do. She is a nurse.
It says here that you can... children under 13 or as part of a childcare bubble. And for caring of vulnerable people. So if you've got a relative who's you provide care for, you can go and do that.
Yeah, well, here in America, we
but a childcare
still...
bubble explicitly refers to daycare groups, and we don't have that.
No.
Yeah.
In the UK, if you're in what they call an essential occupation like nursing, they provide childcare. So if your children are school age, but they've shut the schools, the essential workers can still send their children to school or to childcare facilities.
They don't work that way here.
Yeah.
I just realized every time we open a link in a new tab, I'm turning my mic on.
Right, I'm going to disappear for a while. It'll probably be this evening before I can come back. So if I don't talk to you again before New Year in your part of the world, Happy New Year. And we'll be back later.
All right. See ya,
Tony. Okay.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go too with that. I'll probably be back in either 1 hour or 8 hours, either or. So I guess Happy New Year's if you happen to
find
my
good
break.
Well, y'all have fun. I'm gonna lurk.
Right. See ya. I don't know how to disconnect. See, I'll just close the app. There we go. Goodbye.
This is very quiet.
Well, hopefully people won't notice it once the truncated silence comes in.
I should just pipe the sounds of my children through here.
That is an option.
So, are you ready for the new year? I've already lose weight.
Hey, good morning and happy new year, everybody. This is Short Fat Bald Guy in Northern Kentucky. Good
morning, Short Fat Bald Guy. Over
to happy new year, everybody. New brother Short Fat Bald Guy in Northern Kentucky. Happy New Year, everybody.
You got some echo there, bud.
Happy New Year, everybody.
That is a lot of echo.
Hi, Claudio. I know you're listening because you just posted to Mastodon. So I, too, will have a coffee.
Coffee. I'm making coffee. My wife says we are making coffee.
Sorry, what was that?
I said I am making the coffee, and then my wife corrected me and said we are making the coffee.
Yes, I too am making the coffee.
Fine, I will go and make the coffee.
So I can now have a one-way chat with Claudio M, who's on Mastodon, commenting to my discussions here on the HPR Live New Year's show.
I don't see his comments.
He's on Mastodon.
Yeah, he's not on top of my feed for whatever reason.
Oh, there he is. Still have to get the coffee. Right. What's happening?
Still haven't decided to actually make coffee.
I've made coffee. Turns out the reason people don't like my coffee is because I've been using a tea strainer as a coffee filter. So there's lots of little bits in it. But I like it.
This morning I had the horrible experience of making coffee with not hot water. I was wondering why it wasn't working.
I'm sure there's a name for that type of coffee.
I mean, it could be cold brew, but then it doesn't like work in, you know, a minute.
I gotta jump off, y'all, but I'll be back later, or my evening later for y'all.
Middle of the night for us.
Yeah.
So how was life, CRBS?
It's going great. It's vacation time now, which is gonna end soon, sadly.
Are you involved in D&D still now or not?
No, I didn't have the time in the end. I mean, I would often end up working around the same time still. Had a lot of stuff to do, but not anymore.
Life.
Yeah,
the expression, thank you for reaching out to us, is becoming more and more prevalent here. I find it a really irritating sentence.
In what context?
Dear Mr. Fallon, thank you for reaching out to us. Yes, we did fuck up and whatever. But yeah, thank you for reaching out. What? I'm not reaching out to you. I want... I don't know. You know, your help desks, using it a lot.
Yeah, kind of weird. I generally avoid contacting help desks. Unless it's my internet provider. Unless it's my internet provider, in which case, yeah, I will bug the hell out of them.
I had a reason to call my ISP's help desk, and I ended up doing a HPR interview with the CTO.
Really? Wait, when was that?
January. Next year.
Yeah, I think I listened to that. Seems like ages ago now.
No, it's due to come out in the 1st of January 2020. Oh, sorry, the 7th of January 2021.
See, you make too many interviews. I mean, you don't make enough interviews.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I ended up talking to the dude for an hour and a half. So it was quite nice.
That's a pretty long conversation. What was it about?
Well, you'd have to tune in and hear. I'll give you the summary. Could there be an ISP that wants to be free, open internet for privacy, security, and quality? In this interview with Anko Scholte ter Horst, CTO of Freedom Internet, we discuss the history of the internet in the Netherlands. Inspired by the work of Access for All, a new ISP was founded with privacy, security, and quality at its core. Thank you, Kevin, telling us that we need to welcome in the new year for Queensland, Australia, and five more, Brisbane, Port Moresby, Guam, and Cairns.
Ah, I miss those places.
I miss going anywhere. I miss the commute to work, honest to God. I never thought I'd say that, but there you go.
Yeah, fortunately, my commute to work has substantially reduced at some point in the last 2 years.
Mine has disappeared. It's now the back room.
Well, yeah, sure. Now it's disappeared also, but that's another thing entirely.
Indeed. Don't mention the virus. Don't mention the virus.
I need to make a call now.
Go ahead. I'll sit here and start slagging off Claudio until he just gets fed up and comes on. Bum, bum, bum. Well, I'll use this opportunity to restart the streams, I guess. Saving of the streams.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.